I'm John Kroll. This is National Library Week. To mark the occasion, today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the ways libraries are adapting to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. My guests are Indianapolis Library's Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is National Library Week and today on No Limits, we're going to mark the occasion by talking about the ways libraries are adapting to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indy Library's Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And before we get started on the conversation, I just want to invite our listeners, all who value this program, to do what my wife and I have already done and make your pledge to WFYI to keep programs such as No Limits on the air. You can do this in a couple of ways. You can go online to wfyi.org/give, or you can call 1-800-233-0020. That's 1-800-233-0020. Please make your pledge and accept my gratitude as part of the bargain. You'll feel good that you did. So, National Library Week. This is a somewhat big deal. John, we should talk about first what National Library Week is, and then we're going to broaden into the idea that libraries are far from static institutions.
That's absolutely right. So National Library Week is something that's been happening since 1958, I believe it is. The American Library Association puts it on every year. This year's theme is Libraries Equal Strong Communities, which is meant to kind of speak to the fact, obviously, that we think libraries are about much more than books. Obviously, you can get a whole lot of good books, but it's also a kind of an anchor for a neighborhood and an anchor for a community. Gives a sense of place as well. We do think libraries are about strong communities.
Why did the Library Association settle on that theme this year? Is there particular relevance to stuff that's going on right now?
There's always something going on in the library world. A few years ago, you may remember, there was a big challenge to the library funding on a national level. Mm-hmm. So the Library Association created the National Library Advocacy Day, which happens to be today, April 11th. It's always the Thursday of National Library Week. So we really are trying to emphasize the fact that, you know, people have a lot of stereotypes about libraries, about, you know, it's just a place to go ask someone how tall Mount Everest is and why can't you use Google for that and all that stuff. But we're trying to tell people, well, it's also about a place where you can come get job training. You can come have a conversation in a language you don't speak very well yet. You can come, you know, have someone help you with your resume. There's all kinds of different things that you can do.
And Jessica, it's picking up on that theme. It's also kind of a contact point for people who are trying to come to understand a new community. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say so, actually. From our experience, a lot of the immigrant and refugee communities who we service or who we have begun to have relationships with, they come into the city and they have a lot of touch points. They have their places of worship. They have the schools that their children attend. But in many ways, we also, because there are libraries in essentially every neighborhood here in Marion County, we end up capturing a lot of those communities very early upon their arrival with free access to internet, which means, you know, that's an easy way for them to be able to communicate with their families and for others who may not be here in the city. So we become a touch point very quickly. And so when we see demographic shifts, we see them pretty fast.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that, about the new challenges that creates for libraries and that question of adaptability. But Graham, I'm going to ask from the other end of that equation, not the library, but the immigrant end of the equation. How important is it to have strong libraries for immigrants who are moving into new communities?
It is very important to have those connections as immigrant. Communities feel that very strongly when they arrive to this country or even when they've been here a little bit. The library has such great resources that are mostly free, actually all free, in a way that can help them thrive. A lot of what the library contains for them is a way for them to access material that is going to help them learn the English language. So a lot of the families we interact with at the Immigrant Welcome Center go to the library specifically for the reason that they want to learn the English language and be able to have that understanding of it. But more so, the libraries give the parents and the children a chance to have education pieces and different ways they can interact with the community more than they have before.
How important is it that libraries be welcoming? I mean, I've never lived in another country besides the United States, but I've traveled reasonably extensively. And I know when you enter a new place, it can be pretty intimidating, even the simplest things, like going up to the library and asking for help can be anxiety-driven experiences.
Very true that it's very anxiety-driven, a lot of fear, especially these days. People are finding themselves in a place where they're not sure who to trust. So it's really amazing to have a connection that the Immigrant Welcome Center has to the Indianapolis Public Library, because now we have what are called our neighborhood branches. And we've done these for the last couple of years now, and we've really seen the results of such a wonderful partnership in that there's a time in the week where a branch will be at the library. Currently, we're at Nora and Southport and Michigan Road. And what happens is that the people that come to the library know that there's somebody from the Immigrant Welcome Center there, one of our natural helper volunteers who can assist them in their own language and can be able to help them sign up for a library card, tour the library, show them the resources, etc. That's the way they can know that they can have a place in the library and feel safe. And not only that, feel secure that they can understand what is happening to them, and their families can also feel that they can have a place in the library that is very welcoming to their immigrant communities.
Jessica, what sort of modifications on the library's part were required to really deal with this new challenge? And do you anticipate that even more, that most of the studies show in the not too distant mm-hmm. future, the sort of classic Western European Americans are going to be a plurality rather than a majority.
Yes. So, yes, absolutely. We're thinking about that constantly. Demographic projections tell us that by 2040 or possibly sooner that we are going to have what has been called a minority-majority community, where people of color are going to be the majority in the country. And we know that a lot of the driver behind that is from our immigrant and refugee populations. In fact, our last census, we're coming up on the new census mm-hmm. here pretty soon, but our last census showed us that Marion County had about a 6-point-something% population increase, and that was from primarily foreign-born. So we know that our population in Marion County has a lot of growth from immigrant and refugee communities. And so when we think about, how the library can be as impactful as possible when we're serving those communities, there's a few things. I don't know that I would call them modifications per se, but there's some education mm-hmm. that has to happen, particularly for our staff, because it is a shift. People have been at the library for a long time. This is a shift in thinking in terms of who it is that we're serving and how we serve them. And so we have to be really intentional with the ways that we engage with our community. So how do we equip our staff with the tools to be able to provide the absolute best public service possible? That's really important. What are the resources and tools that they need so they can do their jobs well, and so that we can also be a public service institution that really stands by who we are, our values, and our mission? And so there's the education there. And then there's some of the other things that are starting to become kind of second nature for us, including translation. You know, just having things written in other languages is a big deal. It's so that, you know, if you want to learn how to get a library card or how to access the public library, there are resources available in other languages to do so. And making an adjustment to some of our collections. So what are the languages that we're finding are more prominent in some of our neighborhood communities? And how do we make some really intentional adjustments to our collections so that we can be meeting the needs of our new residents here in Marion County, Indianapolis?
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways that libraries are adapting to ever-changing constituencies, audiences. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, John, what are some of the lessons that have been learned along the way with it? Because, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that Indianapolis was a relatively culturally insulated community. That's not the case anymore. So how has the library, you know, what things did you learn along the way in adjusting to that changing reality?
Well, so the library reality, just the general library reality, has been changing for a long time. And we learned a long time ago that we cannot just sit inside the branch and wait for people to find us. I mean, it's a competitive environment just in general. I mean, I'm talking about things like Netflix that we have to compete with, and we have to be out there hustling for to compete to get people's attention about. Mm-hmm. So with people from different communities who may not have – they may come from a country that doesn't have a strong tradition of public library service like we do. That concept may be entirely foreign to them. So if we don't reach out to them, it's going to be very difficult for that person to walk into a library and you know exactly what to do. So we have to do better about getting in front of people and going to where they are, leaving the branch, going to neighborhood meetings, going to community meetings, knowing who is who in the neighborhood. We've really encouraged our staff to make personal connections in that way with people in their communities instead of just looking at themselves as, you know, I sit at this desk and I wait for someone to ask me a question. That's how, you know, long, long ago, librarians used to see themselves. We don't view ourselves like that anymore. We view ourselves as someone who is really folded into the community, and we're out there hearing those needs when they're being discussed so that we know about them and we can craft a response to them, as opposed to someone bringing us a need and saying, hey, what can you do about this? We want to be out in front and offering people solutions.
Do you worry at all, or is there concern within in the profession about a kind of mission creep? Because as you were talking, I was thinking this is a little bit like what I hear from teachers, too, that we started out being one thing and new responsibilities began being added onto us. It's not just that you guys are custodians and preservers of knowledge, of accumulated knowledge anymore. It sounds like you also have significant social work responsibilities as well.
I think that's accurate. I think, you know, some folks might characterize it as mission creep. Some folks might characterize it as an evolution. You know, some people might look at it as, what do we need to do to remain competitive, to increase our you know, competitiveness against those other things? It's nobody's responsibility to prove that libraries are necessary except ours, in my opinion. So it doesn't make any sense to me to say there's a need out there and we're not going to fill it. Do you know what I mean? So I just don't personally understand the idea that that's mission creep. If there's a community need, it might not be a traditional fact-based need, but if it's an information need, if a community doesn't know how to navigate the DMV or whatever, we can help them with that. If the community, someone in the community doesn't know how to navigate the online school application system, we can help with that. You know what I mean? So it may not be a traditional, you know, I need a copy of Moby Dick for a book report type of question. But if it's an information need, that's our job, and that's what we're here to do.
Graham, one of the things that got said was that, you know, some of the people who are coming here may not come from places or cultures that have a library system similar to ours. Is that sort of educational, you know, making them aware, a difficult challenge for the Immigrant Welcome Center?
Exactly, John. It's a huge challenge to overcome, to have people who come from other countries, various countries in Indianapolis, to say, okay, so here's a place where you're completely foreign to the idea of what it means to borrow a book and then to give it back, right? Just, but beyond that, helping them understand that this is the place that they can have a free resource to do so. And then, yeah, more than anything, it's making them aware of the fact that they can get the help, any kind of help they need there, through our Immigrant Welcome Center and Indianapolis Public Library as well.
If you are just joining us, this is National Library Week. We're marking the occasion by talking about the ways libraries are adapting to the needs of an ever-changing constituency or constituencies. My guests are Indy Library's Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is National Library Week, and we're marking the occasion by talking about the ways libraries are adapting to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. My guests are Indy Library's Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. I also should say that we are in the final hours. We're within about a little bit less than 30 hours of the end of our spring pledge drive, and I would encourage you to give to WFYI. You can do this by going to wfyi.org/give, or you can call 1-800-233-0020. That's 1-800-233-0020. Please do so, because you will feel better if you do. Again, we're talking about libraries and the way they are changing to meet changing needs here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Hi. Thank you for the topic. And thank your guests, John, Jessica, and Graham, for being able to speak about these things. I'm 60 years old, grew up in Indianapolis, and when I was a kid, libraries were quiet places, and there were no computers. Obviously, that's changed. I'm curious about how that change in culture and the advent of technology has changed the education process of library science, and also how and whether the new culture within the library system, in particular the Indianapolis Public Library, is replicated in other library systems, including not just those of municipalities, but also of academia.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, David. John?
So there's really, it's pretty impossible to overstate how radically technology has transformed what we do on a certain level. But on another level, I mean, like I was saying before, it's our job to provide access to information. So whether that's mm-hmm. written down on a piece of paper or that's stored on a computer or what it is, it's our job to figure that out and help people navigate it. So while it's changed the mechanism for what we do, it hasn't changed the core mission of what we do. I will say, the farther along technology moves, the further and further a lot of segments of our user population get left behind. Mm-hmm. And so we have to start from a different place with a lot of patrons. It's the topic at hand is one thing, but then the tool they're using to access that information is a whole other thing. For example, I was just at Nora on Sunday helping a woman who was applying for a job at Steak and Shake. Mm-hmm. And in the past, when I was working in fast food, you just brought your piece of paper in, mm-hmm. and that was that. But this woman had to not only navigate a website, create an email address. She didn't know how to do any of that. But then she had to navigate the actual application process and check back on it in a week. Again, she's got no internet access. So it's you know, like I say, it's difficult to overstate the impact that it's had on what we do from a technological point of view. But it hasn't changed our core mission. We're just here to help connect people to what they need.
Jessica, I saw you nodding your head in affirmation over there. I mean, is this a, you know, in some ways what John's talking about here is, you know, this issue of information equity, making sure that everyone has the same access to information. I see Graham's nodding his head, too. So he'll get a crack at this one right after you're done, too. Okay.
Everything that John said was right on point. Even when in terms of my work with immigrant refugee communities here, you know, and John's example of the woman who's, you know, trying to figure out how to use internet to be able to complete a job application, we actually at our library system offer computer classes that are facilitated completely in Spanish. And we do that because we understand that along with the technological advances that are happening, you also have people who are in the process of developing English skills. And so that's added on top of some of the complexities of being able to access information. And so we get people who come into our sessions sometimes and they literally are learning how to turn on computers. They're learning, and their children may know, which is the other thing that we find. The kids know how to do it, right? But the parents, you know, it's a challenge for them. And so they're trying to figure out how to navigate the technology to apply for jobs, to get basic information on top of the English components to that. And that can be a challenge. And so we're doing everything in our power to help the folks in our community to be able to access the information. And sometimes it means we have to give it to them in the language that's understood best. It doesn't mean they don't understand English. It means they need it in the language that will be most accessible for them at that moment. And so we are very mindful of that.
If there is one experience, I think, that ties all of humanity together, it is that parents of a certain vintage at some point hand their technology over to their children and say,
yes,
show me how to do this.
Exactly.
Graham, you wanted to jump in.
Sure, yeah, to go along with that. So two things. One of them is that at the libraries we find this Mango language learning system. It's really exceptional to see how parents can now go online, especially immigrant parents, when we have the natural helpers at the branches that we're at. And then we're able to say, okay, well, you can take time now to look at the computer and learn English in a system that is very much in your own language, and you can go at your own pace. It's amazing to see how much the library can do for the parents. And beyond that, for the Immigrant Welcome Center, our website is designed to be like an app for parents that only use their smartphones. And it's interesting because statistics show that most immigrants now use their smartphones or their phones as their computer. There is no longer a laptop or desktop that many immigrants, because what do they have when they carry over to this country? They don't have those big laptops. So a lot of what the parents use are their smartphones. And so our Immigrant Welcome Center website is designed to fit like an app would. And the idea is to make sure that we can teach them how to do this on their own, so that when they're at home, they can find all the resources that our website contains for them in their own language, and also at their own leisure, they can look at all these resources that we have collected for them. And it's really great to know that the library has free Wi-Fi, because that's a huge thing. A lot of immigrant parents and families don't have Wi-Fi. And so when they go to the library, if just that, they have a great resource there to know that they can access the internet and have the potential to have a great life.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about libraries and the way they are adapting to meet changing demands and needs. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Don has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Don, you're on the air.
Thank you, John, for an excellent program, as always, and with your splendid guests representing not only our Indianapolis public libraries, but to me, libraries in general around the world. And I've had the good fortune of being the first Brebeuf class from 62 through 66. My parents would drop me off at Central Library. I would walk up those hallowed limestone steps and go in and write my so-called term papers, as they were required for 4 years in my English classes. Now today, I even photograph from the cityscape. When you turn around, you see all of the beautiful vista of Indianapolis in the downtown area. And the library's been so instrumental in my life in research and continued studies. And there's one thought that always stuck with me, and I love the beautiful adaptation of the new steel and glass with our old beautiful limestone library. up on the top is an inscription that has stuck with me all my life, and I want to pass it on. Time by minute slips away, first the hours, then the day. Small the daily loss appears, till it soon amounts to years. So that's kind of been a motivator to get going and get my stuff done. Thanks again, folks. You're wonderful, and A-plus on your report card.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call, Don. Take care. Well, that raises the question, and I'll throw this one to Jessica first. Is we've talked about, and we'll continue to talk about the ways libraries have changed to meet these new needs. What changes do you see ahead? I mean, it's not like these huge cultural changes have completely run their course, and that history is going to stop right now. It's going to continue on, and we're going to see new demands. In what ways do you see the library having to continue adapting to meet these new challenges?
So if we're thinking specifically about how we service immigrant and refugee populations, there are some things that are going to be unchanging again, and that's our ability to provide information and access to those who need it the most. I think some of the things that will change is as the years go by, our staffing may change. The way that our staffing looks will change over time, in that ideally we will have a staff of people who are bi or multilingual and bi or multicultural that will be more representative of the communities that we serve. Considering we are well on our way to having significant shifts in our demographics, as long as we are really doing our part to really promote and push the library and our value, as John has said, that's our responsibility to do so. And so it's our responsibility to recruit and encourage people to go and work for a public library, because there is a ton of value in that. And so, staffing changes, I think, are going to be very different. I think some of the ways that we program may even look different. Even now, we base our programming models on what our community desires. And so developing partnerships that create opportunities for authentic engagement and relationships, I think we'll see more of that. And I think we will see more community engagement in terms of the ways that we are able to connect with our public. Ideally, over time, one of the things that we find, and Graham kind of hinted to this a little bit, people who are not accustomed to public libraries in the way that they exist here in the United States. And so we are constantly fighting against, are you connected to government? We get that a lot. I don't want to give you my information. Mm-hmm. And so as we go and as we continue, even kind of changing the image of who we are, not necessarily that we are a government entity, but that we are third place, that we are a welcoming place, that we are a place for you. We are a place for everyone who lives in our communities. And so really just kind of, I don't want to call it branding, but it's just really kind of rethinking or helping people to rethink their library, who we are and what we are capable of.
Graham, take the question from the other end. I mean, what ways or what changes in the way libraries do things right now would be helpful to the people you serve?
One of the things we're currently doing is looking at, okay, so we have different library demographics, and so we have different sides of town. And so we're strategically placing our natural helpers of different languages in an area that we know they can best serve the population. So what we're doing to change bit by bit is making sure that the area that we're targeting, we can have the most impact by having the languages spoken there. So we're rotating our natural helpers so that there are areas that they can serve where people come to them and they know. It's like we were saying earlier, this idea that the government, it's a very big, there's a lot of fear, John, going on right now in a lot of the communities. And a lot of people just feel that this strong sense of fear, I don't want to give you my information. I don't know what you're going to do with it. So a lot of what we say is if we place a person who speaks their own language there, there's this comfort level that is surpassed by any means of the imagination, because they see somebody that looks like them. They see somebody who speaks like them. And they, their culture, the slang, everything just feels right. And so what we're doing is slowly saying, okay, like Jessica was saying, the staffing and even our natural helper volunteers, what can we do to make you feel more at home? What can we do to bring home to you? And one of the things we're doing is by, we have a lot of programs at the Immigrant Welcome Center. And one of them happens to be right now, we have a grant as of last year that we received to in a long story short, have naturalization expand. So a lot of people who are green card holders, who are residents, now have the ability through the Immigrant Welcome Center in a quarterly basis to have lawyers who can help them for free to fill out the naturalization and 400 form. And what that does is give people that break, the chance to know that they can have lawyers help them for free, that they will not take advantage of them, that they'll be able to help them because the Immigrant Welcome Center is providing that resource. And so now libraries have, we're starting to have a surge again of having the citizenship corners. So we're partnering with the library to build those connections and say, so you want to have a great way to become a citizen? Well, here at the library, you can start by taking the tests, by taking the citizenship corner, knowing that you can belong here and we'll help you along the way. And you don't have to fear because we are here to help you and not hinder you.
We are talking about libraries and the ways that they are adapting to meet the challenges and needs presented by and experienced by ever-changing constituencies. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Katie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi there. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi there. I just want to say, John, big, big, big fan of your show, maybe number one, but
thank you for taking
my call. I just wanted to, I heard the conversation today, and I actually just had a really kind of special and positive experience with the library. My son passed away at 6 weeks old, August 28th.
I am so sorry. Thank you.
So part of my healing process has been starting a nonprofit called the Little Timmy Project. And just yesterday, out of nowhere, I had someone contact me from the library with the Central Indianapolis Library with lots of resources, foundation directory online where I could search for grants. And then offered to send me events on just a series of workshops. And I just thought I was genuinely surprised and, you know, kind of melted my heart a little bit. Like, they found us on GuideStar and reached out to us. So I just love how they kind of added that personal touch. But I just wanted to share that positive experience with the new library programs that are going on.
Thank you very much for calling, Katie, and sharing that. And again, my deep condolences on the loss of your child.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, John, that's got to feel good.
it feels great. Well, first of all, I want to say as the parent of a three-year-old, I agree. I can't imagine the loss that was for her. But also, that couldn't be a better example on the library side of us being proactive and reaching out and saying, here's a group I think we have resources that can be of benefit to. And it sounds like it was a really good fit. So that's a good example of how we as a profession are trying to get out there and to engage and to perceive needs and meet them before the patrons might even not know that they have them.
Jessica, this is, at least part of this, though, in Katie's case, it's not just about the information, but it's kind of the message behind the information that you know, you're part of a community and there are people who care about what you're going through. How important is that really to what the library is doing right now?
It's huge. One of the things that has been really, really important for us to think about as we're going through, I will say a process. I think a lot of organizations right now are going through some new processes and kind of rethinking who they are as institutions. But one of the things that's crucial is that that we're learning is that relationships, authentic relationships, are essential for us to really be able to do this work well. So whether we're talking about immigrant or refugee communities or small business owners or student organizations or community groups, having relationships that are valuable, that are genuine, really helps us to be able to do our work best because it gives us a bird's eye view or a direct view, if you will, into what are the needs of the folks who we're serving and how do we use our resources to best meet them where they are. And so I think that is crucial.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways that libraries are evolving and adapting to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. It's an appropriate conversation. This is National Library Week. My guests are Indy Libraries Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is National Library Week, and to mark the occasion, we're talking about the ways that libraries are adapting and evolving to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. My guests are Indy Libraries Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, John, we were talking about, we've been talking about the ways that libraries and librarians have adapted. I want to talk a little bit about the training librarians are getting, whether it is adequate to these changing circumstances. I'm not picking on librarians because, you know, that's what complain about a lot of professional training is that the educational process is often like generals fighting the last war rather than the coming one. are there ways that that librarians need to be trained for this, you know, this new and emerging world that they aren't being trained now?
Well, there's always going to be new needs, and library schools have it a little bit tough just because they are responsible for training academic librarians, archivists, public librarians, all kinds of different librarians at the same time. So our needs as a public library community are different than all those other groups I just described. I do know that the library school at IUPUI does an outstanding job of listening to us, NDPL, about what we see and what we think should happen and what we would like to see included in the curriculum. I'm actually, I might be a little biased, maybe I should make a disclaimer. I'm an adjunct instructor for the library school. I teach public library management. Mm-hmm. So I think that class is taught very well. It might not surprise you. but the dean of the school, Andrea Copeland, has been really good about asking, you know, practicing librarians what they think and what they're seeing and talking to her students, often who already work in the public library field in a paraprofessional role maybe, and seeing what's out there that needs to be thought about. I will say it's light years ahead of where I was or where the program was when I was in library school down in Bloomington. Yeah. I don't remember ever, for example, being presented with a situation where you might have to engage some of your softer skills, for example, as a mm-hmm. case study. We didn't talk about homelessness in the library. We didn't talk about anything we're talking about today, really. It was much more theoretical. Mm-hmm. So I think libraries as a profession have realized that, you know, there may be a certain amount of mission creep, as you put it, but hey, we have a choice here. We can either ignore it or we can address it. And I think we as a community have chosen to address it. And I think the library schools have gotten behind that.
Graham, you talked a little earlier in the program about the anxiety, the fear right now that is out there among many communities. I want to talk a little bit about what libraries can do and are doing to alleviate those anxieties or those fears. And don't worry, John and Jessica, there's a follow-up coming for you guys, too.
Yes. So one of the things that libraries are currently doing, I believe, is giving people a sense of hope. A lot of what the material and a lot of the books right now I've seen that I'm assuming no coincidence at all. A lot of the books that are put on display, a lot of books that give people hope, a lot of books about dreams, a lot of books about seeing where your potential could be, and even just in the different sections, for people to have a sense of knowing that there's a school out there or training or some kind of way that they can have those skills they need to thrive is great. And one of the things that even at the Immigrant Welcome Center we're doing is making sure that they know that there are those conversation circles. Those are really big right now, because what the library is doing is saying to people, we know that you don't speak the language very well, but we want to help you. And there are people who are volunteering of their time, who are, talk about training, who are being trained specifically for the purpose of helping you learn your English language skills better. And what better way than to see that thrive between the partnership that exists between the library and the immigrant community?
So, Jessica, and I'll give John a crack at this one, too. You know, perhaps in some places it shouldn't seem as though being inclusive and welcoming would be making a political statement. But unfortunately, in this environment today, in many places, it is a political statement. Those of us of a certain vintage can remember when many librarians felt compelled to take a stand in regard to some of the Patriot Act's provisions, how uncomfortable that seemed to make the entire profession. They did not see themselves in that role. The fact that in many ways, just by doing some of the things we have talked about today, libraries and librarians are walking along a kind of political fault line. You know, what stresses does that create for the people who work in the libraries?
You know, I will say from this vantage point, I'm not focused on the politics. We're focused on the people, people over politics, right? That we all have lived human experiences. And so when we think about creating experiences for the public who we serve, and doing that in inclusive and welcoming ways, I'm not thinking about the politics. I'm thinking about how do we create the best possible environment so that individuals in our communities have access to information and to resources, period. I'm not in I know that the politics is there, of course, but again, I am people over politics all day. And so thinking about the human lived experiences of people and how do we make sure that everyone, every individual has access and opportunity in ways that are equitable. And we only obtain equity when we're inclusive. And so from my stance, that's kind of where I am with that, and probably unapologetically so.
John, when this is one of the times I sort of wish we were operating in a visual medium, because when I talked about the reaction among librarians about the Patriot Act, you sort of went through this knowing nod and then kind of rueful sort of shrug or whatever. Does it create some uneasiness?
Well, a little bit. First, I want to just echo what Jessica said and say I couldn't agree more strongly with the people over politics. We obviously, when we say we're here to serve everyone, we do mean literally everyone, and it does not matter what the background is, doesn't matter what the belief system is, doesn't matter literally anything except for, do you have an information need? If so, then you're welcome here. But yeah, to your point, John, I mean, we do find ourselves not intentionally usually, but sometimes just kind of thrust into that point where we have to take a stand. And I do think librarians as a profession are getting more comfortable with that. So a good recent example, you may have read about the drag queen story hours that have been taking place in Indiana, but also all across the country. That program has been going on for a while now. It's kind of continued to gain opposition, so to speak. And now libraries are faced with the choice. Do we continue down that road and draw more criticism, perhaps, and stick to our guns? Or do we, for lack of a better term, take the easy way out and say, we didn't sign up for this controversy. That's not what we really intended. So why don't we just step back from that? I think librarians, you know, to keep hitting on this, in order to remain relevant, do have to stick to their guns. And if we really are about, as Jessica said, being inclusive, this is what that looks like. And we're either about that or we're not. So I wouldn't say I rue it. Nobody wants to be the source of conflict, and nobody wants to be that, you know, contention. But it's part of doing business nowadays, and you're either in it to win it or you're not.
You know, I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on this. Do you think some of it is that there is still not an awareness really of what a radical idea an institution libraries are? I have a friend who is a career librarian who, yeah, will say periodically, you know, if libraries didn't exist and somebody just popped up with the idea right now, oh, we're going to open this thing that will allow you just to come and borrow books, and people will bring them back automatically, and it will be free. And
you'd get laughed everybody, out of the room.
Yes, yeah. So is that part of you know, what we've got right now is that, you know, people don't understand that the mission is one that is sort of a radical, one of the more radical ideas from the Enlightenment age.
I think that's perfectly well said. I mean, I think we do kind of as an organization lose sight of the fact that what we're doing is not only important, it's extremely difficult to accomplish in any other way these days. So if we do lose sight of that, I think we risk, you know, forgetting all the trouble it took to get this whole thing going in the first place and the impact that we have.
If anyone wants to add to that, but I got a couple of calls I'd like to try to get to. Any? Nope. Okay. We're going to take a call now from a listener named Bill. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
This may speak to the mission creep that you were talking about. My wife and I moved to Fishers just less than a year ago. They have a great library here, and we discovered, actually quite by accident, that in the lower level of the library, they have this huge space. It's a few thousand square feet at least, where people can come in and make art. They can check out kits to make watercolor art with the family. They can take lessons on how to throw pots on a wheel. They have several wheels there. They have a laser printer. They have a laser cutter. They have a 3D printer. All this stuff that we never expected to find in a library. And I wonder if the Indy Library is doing anything like that, or what your thoughts are on that sort of an addition to the library. Is that going way beyond what you think the library's mission should be?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Bill. John.
Mm-hmm. So that's absolutely an increasing trend in the library world in general. That's probably could be considered a type of makerspace, which is a word I'm sure everybody has heard. A lot of people think that's just a 3D printer in a room, but a more general way to think of it is if you think of the traditional library as a pantry where you go grab your ingredients, the modern library that includes a makerspace, you might think of it as a kitchen where you can actually use the knowledge that you've gained through the collection or whatever to create something, whether that's art or whether that's a 3D model or whether that's a sewing kit or whether that's a recording studio. Libraries are taking it in all kinds of directions. We do have a makerspace at Central Library. It's not as robustly staffed as I think the Fishers Library is, so it's not available at all times, but we do have that technology.
If you are just joining it, Jessica, you look like you wanted to say something.
I did.
Okay.
Just really quickly.
Sure.
Just a piggyback off of what John said. I think one of the other things to keep in mind in terms of the library as a resource, we are offering these services for free at no cost. And so even if we think about like what our demographic changes look like from a socioeconomic perspective, we know that Marion County, unfortunately, is becoming a lot poorer. And so a lot of the things that we're talking about are things that cost money. Mm-hmm. And so how do we give people access to even these things like arts and sewing kits or C's, like through the C library? How do we give people access so that they can have experiences without having to spend a lot of money? Because if you come to us, you don't pay a dime. And so I think that's something to keep in mind, too, that we're also talking about folks who have limited financial resources to be able to access these things as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about libraries and how they are evolving to meet the needs of ever-changing constituencies. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Or do what a listener named Tori has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tori, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
I work with a company that is a vendor partner for libraries across the nation, and I work with the Indianapolis Public Library. The focus of our company is STEAM initiative and makerspace-based products. And I just wanted to put in my 2 cents worth and let everyone there know how much all of us here truly appreciate what libraries across the nation are doing to introduce makerspace and STEAM technologies to their communities in an effort to help prepare them for a new direction in the upcoming job market. I think it's imperative that communities are aware of what libraries are doing and what they're offering to help introduce these programs to their communities.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Tori.
Thank you.
Certainly. So if I'm hearing an overarching theme from our conversation, and we're getting a little bit close on time, so it is that libraries' essential function is to level the information and information and access playing fields in some ways. What are the challenges still ahead in terms of libraries being able to do that, to do it more completely? I don't think anyone here would say libraries are doing it absolutely perfectly, because we don't have a completely equitable society. Graham, I'll start with you.
Sure. Thank you for that. So I think that one of the challenges we're facing right now, for example, yes, we have computer classes, English and Spanish, but people will say there's more than those two languages, right? Mm-hmm. So looking at what is it that we can do as far as the idea of offering those languages in Arabic, in Kiswahili, in Farsi. So what can we do to add that diversity we can have to the libraries? And as well as we're trying to do the lunch and learns as well. We have those quarterly. And so we present different countries, the presentation of what we each want to show, what that country looks like, and to give the idea of what that country holds for the people that want to learn about it. So we have those once in a while with the Immigrant Welcome Center and the Library Partnership. But again, we can only do one country at a time. And there's a myriad of countries out there. So what is it to say that we're a diverse society, but beyond that, pick and choose which ones we present? It's really hard for us to see that, but we do what we can with what we've been given. And I think that's a great way that the library can continue doing lunch and learns. We can continue doing English classes and conversation circles, anything we can do. And I think any ideas that people want to have for the Immigrant Welcome Center and the library to continue partnering would always be welcome.
Jessica.
The other thing I want to say, too, in terms of thinking about where we're headed in the future in terms of creating more equitable outcomes and experiences, is we need to make sure that we have the right people at the table, and we need to be very intentional about that even as we move forward as a library system. Who are we partnering with? How are we making decisions about how we provide services to the public? And we need to make sure that we have appropriate representation at the table when we're making those decisions, so we're not doing them in a vacuum, so that we're being intentional about how we service our public, which ideally in the end will hopefully create more equitable experiences for those who we serve.
John, it looks like you're going to get the last word on this.
I like it that way. One of the things that we need to do as a library system in general, and library professionals I think need to do in general, is to get better about articulating their impact on their communities and using that articulation to increase their resources. Because to echo what Jessica said, everything that we do costs money. And the more resources we have, the greater impact that we have. We recently learned, we commissioned a study that said for every dollar that gets invested into the public library through tax money, we see a $3 community impact. So we need to do a better job of telling that story, because that, our consultants tell us, was on par with what the zoo generates. And I don't think many people would think of that naturally off the top of their heads. So we just need to do a better job of telling our story and to continue to remain active in that way.
That will have to be the last word. I would like to thank my guest, Indy Libraries Director of Public Services, John Helling, Immigrant Outreach Specialist, Jessica Moore, and Graham Melendez from the Immigrant Welcome Center for what's been a lively conversation. I've enjoyed talking with all of you. And I would like to encourage our listeners to give to WFYI. You can go to wfyi.org/give or call 1-800-233-0020. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.